Chapter 105. The consul's departure. During the scenes just described, Dr. Johnson was engaged in examining the sick, of whom, as it turned out, all but two were to remain in the ship. He had evidently received his cue from Wilson, one of the last called below into the cabin. Just as the quarter-deck gathering dispersed, I came on deck quite incensed. My lameness, which, to tell the truth, was now much better, was put down as, in a great measure, affected, and my name was on the list of those who would be fit for any duty in a day or two. This was enough. As for Dr. Long Ghost, the shore physician, instead of extending to him any professional sympathy, had treated him very cavalierly. To a certain extent, therefore, we were now both bent on making common cause with the sailors. I must explain myself here. All we wanted was to have the ship snugly anchored in Papeete Bay, entertaining no doubt that, could this be done, it would in some way or other peaceably lead to our emancipation. Without a downright mutiny, there was but one way to accomplish this: to induce the men to refuse all further duty, unless it were to work the vessel in. The only difficulty lay in restraining them within proper bounds. Nor was it without certain misgivings that I found myself so situated that I must necessarily link myself, however guardedly, with such a desperate company, and in an enterprise too, of which it was hard to conjecture what might be the result. But anything like neutrality was out of the question, and unconditional submission was equally so. On going forward, we found them 10 times more tumultuous than ever. After again restoring some degree of tranquility, we once more urged our plan of quietly refusing duty, and awaiting the result. At first, few would hear of it, but in the end, a good number were convinced by our representations. Others held out. Nor were those who thought with us in all things to be controlled. Upon Wilson's coming on deck to enter his boat, he was beset on all sides, and, for a moment, I thought the ship would be seized before his very eyes. Nothing more to say to you, men. My arrangements are made. Go forward, where you belong. I'll take no insolence. And, in a tremor, Wilson hurried over the side in the midst of a volley of execrations. Shortly after his departure, the mate ordered the cook and steward into his boat, and saying that he was going to see how the captain did, left us, as before, under the charge of Bembo. At this time we were lying becalmed pretty close in with the land, having gone about again, our main topsail flapping against the mast with every roll. The departure of the consul and German was followed by a scene absolutely indescribable. The sailors ran about deck like madmen, Bembo, all the while leaning against the taffrail by himself, smoking his heathenish stone pipe, and never interfering. The cooper, who that morning had got himself into a fluid of an exceedingly high temperature, now did his best to regain the favor of the crew. Without distinction of party, he called upon all hands to step up and partake of the contents of his bucket. But it was quite plain that, before offering to intoxicate others, he had taken the wise precaution of getting well tipsy himself. He was now once more happy in the affection of his shipmates, who, one and all, pronounced him sound to the kelson. The pisco soon told, and, with great difficulty, we restrained a party in the very act of breaking into the after-hold in pursuit of more. All manner of pranks were now played. Masthead, there. What do you see? Bald beauty, hailing the main truck through an enormous copper funnel. S standby for stays, roared Flash Jack, bawling off with the cook's axe, at the fastening of the main stay. L looky out for quails, shrieked the Portuguese, Anton, darting a handspike through the cabin skylight. And heave round cheerily, men, sung out Navy Bob, dancing a hornpipe on the forecastle. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.